ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
AI is changing not just how we work, but it's also changing how we fight war. And we see that on our screens. We see what's happening in Iran. We see what's happening in Gaza. We see what's happening in Ukraine.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Awabakal and Gadigal people. Lately, there have been a lot of airstrikes around the Persian Gulf, but one of the targets really surprised me.
Strikes on water desalination plants reported in several countries.
Water desalination plants.
An Iranian desalination plant was bombed by the US and Israel.
Desalination plants, which turn seawater into drinking water, aren't generally something people pay a lot of attention to, as Donald Trump can attest.
So I know nothing about a desalinization plant other than...
But in the Gulf region, they're a very, very big deal, particularly for Iran. Desalination plants are a huge part of the Iranian regime's security. They need these plants to remain intact, not just to maintain their water supply, but also to maintain their control. In the last few years, severe water shortages have been one of the biggest drivers of organised opposition to the regime. In Australia, we have a pretty good mental image of a drought. We've seen those before. Dry, cracked riverbeds, angry farmers, dead livestock, you know the drill. But what Iran has been experiencing is so, so much worse than that. The regime has botched its water policy so badly that large cities are literally sinking into the desert. And if anything is going to make the Iranian people angry enough to overthrow the regime, it's going to be this. In this, our third episode of our series on Iran, we're taking a look at the Iranian water catastrophe and why the person who provides a solution to it may be the one that comes out on top. I'm Matt Bevan. And this is If You're Listening. The one thing you can probably remember from primary school geography is learning about the water cycle.
Water from the broad expanse of ocean evaporates and forms clouds. From clouds to earth, it falls as rain. Finding its way into streams and rivers, this water flows back to the sea.
The tricky thing about the way the water cycle works is that it doesn't necessarily deposit the water in the places you want it. This is particularly true in countries like Iran.
Most of Iran looks like this: dried vegetation and barren mountains. Yet this land, which seems barely able to support human life, has a history dating back more than 3,000 years.
Iran is one of the oldest continuous civilizations on Earth, despite being incredibly dry.
It seems strange that a great empire should have been established and its capital built in the midst of a desert.
Lots of ancient civilizations developed methods of moving water long distances, canals and aqueducts. But Iran's climate is so hot that those trusty methods don't work because above-ground canals lose too much water to evaporation. So the ancient Persians came up with a brilliant but simple innovation.
Where there was no river, the people dug underground waterways to carry the water from the melting snow on the far-off mountains.
The invention, which spread from Iran across the known world, was known as the kanat.
The kanats are built by digging vertical holes at about 30 metres or 33-yard intervals, and then connecting these laterally to make underground passages for the water to run through. This was how the people of a waterless land overcame their problem.
The Persians took kanat building very seriously. Tens of thousands were built across the arid countryside. The kanats took on a kind of mystical, semi-religious quality. In some parts of the empire, it was thought that if a kanat began to run dry, you could encourage it to provide more water by finding it a wife. local widows would be married to Kanats in wedding ceremonies. The bride would then receive a share of the farm products produced by the water her new husband was providing. So, ladies, if you're struggling to find a good man, consider marrying an underground water tunnel instead. At least they pay the bills.
Water supply simply comes down to having enough fresh water in the right place at the right time. It's always been this way.
Kanats, dams, and careful water management were instrumental in creating ancient Persia and modern Iran.
The beautiful city of Esfahan, on the banks of the Zayenda River, is blessed with trees.
This ABC documentary, filmed in 1972, visited the ancient metropolis of Isfahan.
The Islam religion, born in the monotonously brown desert, has, by contrast, given birth to these richly coloured mosques.
For centuries, Isfahan was the capital of the Persian Empire, the home of the Shah. It was an oasis in the endless Iranian desert.
This mosque is called the Mashi Shah, the Mosque of Kings.
The Mashi Shah Mosque is right in the centre of the city.
When you stand directly under the dome and clap your hands, the sound echoes off the walls. The mosque is so built that wherever you stand, you can always hear the prayers.
Outside the mosque is a square filled with stunning flowers and a fountain. Things you wouldn't expect to see in the middle of the Iranian desert.
The availability of water was an important reason for the growth and success of Esfahan.
The centerpiece of the city is two stone arch bridges across the river.
The Kaju Bridge was built 400 years ago, and it still serves as a place of rest for the people of Esfahan. Because it means so much, water always brings pleasure to Iranians.
Isfahan is a city with a peculiar character. When it was the capital of the Persian Empire, people would say that Isfahan is half of the world. But ever since the Iranian government moved to Tehran in the late 18th century, the city had a bit of a chip on its shoulder. Like other former capitals, like Kyoto or St. Petersburg, it has a vague air of snobbery, a feeling that it retains cultural superiority over the chaotic corruption of Tehran. Isfahan is famous for its refined sweets. It's the birthplace of gaz, a nougat filled with pistachio nuts. If Isfahan is gaz, Tehran is gummy bears. The citizens of Isfahan's disdain for Tehran drove them to become key supporters of the Islamic Revolution against the Shah in 1979.
The most beautiful city in Iran is now, to all intents and purposes, in the hands of the people. Unlike some other cities in Iran, and particularly the capital, Tehran, the rule of the Muslim leaders is highly organized and well-disciplined here.
The 1979 revolution may have changed the regime, but it didn't change the most important thing about Isfahan.
The flowing Zayenda River still supports Isfahan as it did in the past.
So, yeah. About that ancient river. Let's fast forward to now and see how well it's holding up.
An entire river has gone dry in central Iran.
Oh boy, this is very bad. To understand where things went wrong for the Zayenda Rud River, you need to go west from the dry riverbed of Isfahan and see what's happening upstream. 75 kilometres away, you come across something you don't usually see in the middle of a desert. Two enormous steel mills on each side of the river, protruding right out of the sand. What are they doing here? Well, let's go to a very enthusiastic gentleman from Iranian state TV to find out.
Iran is an impressively determined country with an iron will to make a brighter future. As part of the 20-year vision plan, Iran aims to become the world's seventh largest steelmaker.
Sounds exciting.
These plans have broadened the domestic iron ore market, providing numerous opportunities.
One of these two steel mills, the Mobarek steel mill, is the largest in the Middle East. Now, I grew up a short bike ride away from a steel mill, and one of the things I can remember most about it is the amount of steam that billows out of the chimneys above the mills. As kids, we called them cloud machines. And that's fine in a coastal place like Newcastle, because all that steam is just evaporated seawater. To go back to the primary school geography class water cycle lesson,
evaporation of water from the ocean,
or in this case, from the steel mill, leads to
formation of clouds in the sky.
But in the middle of the desert, evaporating water from the ocean isn't an option. In the middle of the desert, you sometimes have to choose. You can have a flowing river, or you can have steel. Further upstream on the Zayanderud River, there's a dam. Its purpose, in part, is to divert the flow of water to the provinces surrounding Isfahan, which have been historically very dry. All of this, in addition to water being pumped out for agricultural irrigation, means that the river water never actually arrives in Isfahan. It's all been used upstream.
Key lakes and sources of water are running dry, and the shortages will get worse.
But why would you do this? Why would you divert the entirety of a river into steel, irrigation, and neighbouring provinces, only to leave your second largest city literally high and dry? Well, it started way back before the Islamic Revolution of 1979.
Rich in oil, Iran in 1957 began channeling revenues from this resource into a program of national betterment under the dynamic leadership of His Imperial Majesty Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, Shahan Shah, King of Kings.
The Shah knew that Iran was strategically vulnerable, surrounded by real and potential enemies. Building all his industries on the coast would make them easy to destroy. So he decided to build strategically important industries in the heart of the country, around Isfahan. He wanted the country to be self-sufficient, not reliant on anyone else for their strategic needs.
We are going to develop everything that could be developed in our country. Use atomic power, transform our agriculture into the most modern one of the main producers of steel.
To do that, he would need control over water. The existing kanats wouldn't be enough.
A time to build more and new water storage facilities.
He instigated a large infrastructure project, building dams and pipelines to divert water where he wanted it.
For all men and all progress are dependent on adequate water supply.
The Shah never got to see the result of his efforts. He was overthrown in the Islamic Revolution and died soon afterwards. And you'll never guess who took over his big infrastructure projects.
The IRGC, Iran's Revolutionary Guard, is the nation's most powerful military and political force.
Yes, you may remember them from last week's episode.
It's like a branch of the armed forces. In fact, it has an army, navy, and air force. It has commercial and financial interests, its own intelligence service.
The Iranian regime's Swiss Army knife. One of the tools in that knife is a massive construction company, which picked up the contracts to continue the Shah's dam building project. And they went kind of nuts with it. They were like human beavers, building dams all over the country, exploiting every water resource they could find. Whoever controls the water in an arid country like Iran holds an enormous amount of power. The IRGC followed the Shah's plans for self-sufficiency, using their water resources to build water-intensive industries inland and create vast agricultural zones.
Iran has been after self-sufficiency in agriculture and food production for the past three decades.
When most countries try to make themselves self-sufficient, they mean in terms of staples. Can we produce enough calories to feed our population if, for some reason, we are cut off from the rest of the world? Iran took a different route and decided to fully go bananas. Well, not fully, there were also watermelons and apples. Around 1970, when the Shah's water management plans kicked in, Iran was producing a similar amount of fruit each year as other dry countries like Australia, Morocco, and Israel.
Iran has made great achievements in the field of agricultural products over recent years, becoming one of the main producers in the region.
By 2008, it was producing more than double the combined amount of all three countries.
Wow, have you ever seen so many pomegranates in one place? I haven't. This is my first time.
In 2008, Iran overtook orchard powerhouse Turkey to become the biggest fruit producer in the Middle East. it wasn't just producing traditional Iranian crops like pistachios for Isfahan's famous Gaz. It was planting water-intensive crops like watermelons, apples, citrus fruits. The trouble is, orchards are a very long-term water investment. Once they're planted, you need to irrigate them heavily every year through droughts or scarcity, or your farm will die. But that's fine. If water looks like it's running dry, you can just make like a beaver and build more dams, right? By the early 2010s, the IRGC started to realise that they may have a bit of a problem.
Currently, the attention is being paid to effectively managing water supplies rather than focusing on building dams.
During the past couple of years, dozens of dams have been built in different regions in Iran, but some of them are working only with 10 to 20% of their capacities.
It turns out dams aren't like a field of dreams type thing. If you build it, the water will not necessarily come.
Experts believe the water issue is reaching an alarming level considering Iran's immense size, semi-arid climate, and defining topographical features, as well as droughts that are drying waterways and depleting groundwater.
Depleting groundwater. Now, this is where the story starts to get scary. With rivers and dams running dry, people started building wells and tapping the aquifers. The trouble is, aquifers take decades to refill. In Isfahan, farmers and residents have been draining the aquifers for years. When you drain the aquifers, the ground above them starts to collapse. And when you have an ancient city built on top of sinking ground, it's certainly not great. Parts of Isfahan started sinking at up to 30 centimetres per year. Cracks began opening up in footpaths and in walls. Houses started falling down. Residents described what was happening to their city as a slow earthquake. And over time, the Zayanda Rud River, which the city of Isfahan had relied on for centuries, dried up entirely.
An entire river has gone dry in central Iran. Thousands of farmers have been protesting for more than 3 weeks now.
Thousands of protesters set up tents in the dry riverbed next to the city's historic stone arch bridges.
They are demanding the Zayanda Rud River back.
The huge depletion in groundwater means that it's not just the river that's running dry, the wells are too. This has made the people of Iran angry, and they are directing that anger very specifically towards the government. But these angry people aren't radicals. They're not leftist students or American spies. They're everyday Iranians from all across the political spectrum. People have been periodically protesting water shortages in Isfahan for more than a decade now. But it's progressively been getting worse, not only because of government policy, but because of the compounding effects of climate change. Every part of society needs water to function, and if you've got a shortage, it's going to affect everything. Agriculture, industries, finance, politics, everything.
A combination of very bad economical situation combined with energy problem, water shortage and pollution.
In an attempt to fix the problem, the government started diverting more water from the rainy mountainous edges of the country into the increasingly dry central plateau. But this just led to protests spreading into those regions too.
Similar protests had broken out earlier in July. Iranians in southwest Khuzestan were on the streets. They too wanted water, but they got bullets.
The government's next plan was to start construction on massive desalination plants in the Persian Gulf, then to pump the fresh water they produce inland to the desert through 1,000-kilometre-long pipes. The project is partially funded by Isfahan's steel mills to provide water for cloud making. But building desalination plants to service desert steel mills and watermelon crops makes no economic sense whatsoever. It's like trying to end a drought with a fire truck. Sure, it'll help a bit, but it's not exactly a long-term water strategy. Just move your industries to somewhere it rains. Is it any wonder that by the beginning of this year, people were so angry?
Chanting on the streets and in universities, Iranians are calling for an end to the Islamic Republic.
The world is still waiting to discover the death toll from a crackdown on anti-government protests in Iran.
Despite a digital blackout, glimpses of what is happening in Iran are emerging.
We don't know for sure how many people were killed in the protests in January. The Iranian government says thousands. Dissident groups say upwards of 30,000.
Demonstrators have taken to the streets, which are now lined with the dead.
Iran is one of the oldest civilizations on Earth. For thousands of years, its people survived in the desert by treating water like the most precious thing they had. Over the last 50 years, the state, under both the Shah and the Islamic Republic, has treated water as if you can conjure it out of nowhere if you just pour enough concrete and build enough pipes. Now that gamble has backfired. The desalination plants the government was building in an attempt to shut the protesters up didn't solve the problem. Neither did shooting the protesters in the street. Under the laws of war, destroying infrastructure that civilians rely on for drinking water is generally prohibited. But those desalination plants that the Iranian population so desperately needs are now apparently military targets. Maybe this water crisis will help bring the regime down. Maybe it won't. But whatever government emerges from the ashes of this war is inheriting a massive, urgent problem. Iran is running out of water, and a détente with the West isn't going to change that. If You're Listening is written by me, Matt Bevan. It's produced by Adair Shepherd and Pat Sunderland. Supervising producer is Kara Jensen-McKinnon. Next week, we're going to take a look at Iran's sophisticated use of internet blackouts to control information and their attempts to create their own China-inspired Great Firewall. I'll catch you then.